This Memorial Day, click into cordless power at the Home Depot. Tackle your yard cleanup with the precision and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt expanded cordless string trimmer. Then power through the heavier debris with more than an hour of runtime on the Ryobi 40-volt cordless battery blower. Right now, you can get either one for only $159 each. It's time to click into Memorial Day doing at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Letarte on Location. I'm your host, Steve Letarte. When you spent more than 20 years of your life traveling the road, first as a NASCAR crew chief and now as an analyst for NBC, you're bound to meet some interesting characters along the way. With Letarte on Location, the goal is to bring you closer to some of the personalities I've connected with in a bunch of great and interesting locations. So sit back and get ready for some off-the-grid conversation. Today, we have a Letarte on Location first. We've been in bars, coffee shops, racetracks, pool halls, garages, you name it. But today we are coming from a hospital, and not just any hospital. We're at Levine's Children's Hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. And perhaps I think even more crazier for me is that we're at a media studio within a hospital. So today, if you're going to go to a cool place, you have to have a cool guest. So I have a cool guest today. So I looked for your title before I introduce you. I've had presidents, crew chiefs, drivers. So I'm going with a daughter of an Xfinity Series championship owner, graduate of Florida State University, and a sports marketing degree. So I didn't graduate college. She did. Business owner of a clothing boutique, longtime girlfriend partner to Cup champion Martin Truex Jr., cancer survivor, and the name behind the hashtag and movement of Sherry Strong. I have Sherry Pollux joining me. Thank you for coming down and saying hello.
Thanks for having me.
This is
quite
be
the introduction.
Fun.
Thanks.
Well, listen, I was looking for a simple title, but there's nothing simple about it. That's a lot of hats.
Yeah, I mean, I would say out of all that, the most important thing and the one thing that the Sherry Strong movement's really cool, but is just me being founder of the Martin Truex Jr. Foundation was probably like the biggest thing for me that got me into where we are today and why we're in Seacrest Studios here at the Children's Hospital. So all of that has been an important part of my journey and how I ended up where I'm at today. But I think the most important piece of all of that is the philanthropy work. It's just a huge part of who I am, and I love it.
Well, it's amazing, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that. But you mentioned it. Okay, so I think the listeners can understand a hospital. We're lucky to live in Charlotte, which is quickly becoming a medical kind of centerpiece up and down the East Coast. I've been fortunate enough. I worked with Ronald McDonald House for a long time, and they've educated me on a lot that's going on here. But this Seacrest Studios. So I'm going to let you explain why a media studio in a hospital.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody listening is probably familiar with who Ryan Seacrest is. You know, obviously, ever since American Idol started, he kind of became this big phenom of just media and the music world. But he came up with this great idea. He has a foundation called Ryan Seacrest Foundation, and he came up with this great idea to have these media studios inside hospitals where we could pipe into the kids' rooms and they could listen to musical guests that come in and perform. They play games here. They do stuff like this. So it's just an amazing place. I mean, it doesn't feel like you're in a hospital, right?
It's not at all.
You're
not
inside
all.
A DJ booth. It's so cool. And I think the kids love it. And, you know, I think it just, it's something different when you're sitting in a hospital room for months or weeks on end. You know, you get to listen to some music. They can, I believe they can even call in like requests, right? And from their rooms, which is so cool.
That is awesome.
Yes. It's so awesome. So Martin and I have been here a couple times, and we've been here when there's been musical guests here, and it's just incredible. To sometimes they'll bring the kids down and they sit in here and they'll play music and they get to meet some stars, and they've had some big guests in here, so it's really cool for us to be a part of it. Our foundation helped build it. It's near and dear to my heart. I'd like to go visit all of them because they're in hospitals all across the U.S. but this is the only one I've ever been to, but it's on my bucket list to go to all of them one day.
You might be able to take me along. So this podcast is actually being broadcast into the rooms of the kids. What a great idea. You know, it's so personally, as a father of two kids, you know, all you want is for your children to be healthy. Unfortunately, everyone's not healthy. It's not how the world is. I've been blessed with the chance to go between Make-A-Wish and Nationwide Children's Hospital, a bunch of different programs I've been a part of. I got to go visit some of these kids. And the fact that someone, much as yourself and Ryan Seacrest, thinks about not just trying to make the kid healthier, how else can we make it more manageable, more reasonable. Such a great idea. I would have never thought of it.
Right? I know. And I think, yeah, like we were talking about earlier, like if your kids are in the hospital and they're dealing with some type of illness, whether they're here for surgery or they have cancer or whatever they're going through, you know, what can you do to bring them a little bit of hope and to kind of mm-hmm. give them an environment where it's upbeat and it doesn't feel like they're in a hospital?
Right.
And Laveen Children's Hospital does such an amazing job doing that. You walk in here and it just exudes joy and hope. And I love this place. Every time I come here, I just want to go upstairs and go in all the rooms and see the kids. And they have a great activity room upstairs. They do games, and we've had ice cream socials here, and we've done so many cool things here in conjunction with Catwalk for a Cause. You know, our big fashion show that we do, we get a lot of our kids from here. So it is really incredible that this place is right in our backyard, and I love coming down here. And it's, yeah, Seacrest Studios is really cool.
Yeah, I look, what the walls are covered with the who's who of everything that have been here. It's really amazing.
It is cool.
but listen, we have a lot to talk about. We're going to circle back to a lot of things. You're one of those people that I have known for a long time, but mm-hmm. never really got to know. We our social circles would touch, our obviously professions would touch at times, but we just have always been so busy. So I was excited for this opportunity. So when I was doing my research, I was shocked to know you are 4 days older than me.
Seriously?
Yeah, 4 days.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
I'm May 14th of 79. 79 was a great year.
79 really, was a great
it
year.
It really happened in May. And that was my job. And I tell you, this is going to sound awful, but when I did my research on you and everything you've done, it didn't become real until our birthdays almost connected. I know that sounds odd, but I'm like, we have lived almost the same life, like almost the exact same amount of time on this earth. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
So I'm really looking forward to this.
That's why I like you. You're a Taurus.
Oh, yeah. Tauruses. That's
We're bulls. We're stubborn, aren't we?
That's right. That's right. You can call it stubborn. My wife politely calls it strong-willed.
Yes. Okay.
I like stubborn better. So let's go on. So I've known you a long time for a lot of reasons. Let's go back before I knew you. Michigan native.
Yeah.
Early in life, moved to Florida, though.
Yeah, I moved to Florida when I was in middle school. Unfortunately, my parents got divorced, and my mom wanted to change the pace, so she moved us to Florida. And, you know, it was tough. I think any time, you know, any kind of trauma like that happens in your life and you move from the place that you've grown up and you loved. I still spend a ton of time in Michigan. Martin and I have a place up there in northern Michigan. We visit a lot. My dad's still there. It's a huge part of my life, but I did, you know, after that, spend a lot of time in Florida and then went to school at Florida State. So
was it always Florida State, or did you think maybe go back to Big Blue?
I thought about going back to Michigan, not Big Blue. My dad's a Spartan. So we bleed
green
and white.
So there's no blue in the family.
Yeah, there's no blue in the family. I thought about going back to Michigan State, but at the time, I mean, I'd kind of, you know, had some roots in Florida, and my family, my mom was there, my sister was there, and I don't know, I was always a Seminole fan, and I thought, I thought about going to UF, and I was like, man, I can't make myself be a Gator.
Yes.
I just can't bring myself to do it. So, I ended up going to Florida State, not really sure what I wanted to do, and got into sports marketing, and I loved it. And that was kind of right about the time that my dad had started getting into racing
mm-hmm.
and was selling insurance, and went to NASCAR to actually sell insurance to them, which is crazy. And met Chad Little, and then this ripple effect of him becoming a car owner came about. And I mean, my family had always kind of watched NASCAR and been around it. As a little girl, I went to MIS, and I mean, I remember being in the stands with my dad and having a Rusty Wallace t-shirt on, and just,
Rusty was my guy. I used to have one of those Kodiak t-shirts, the 27 Kodiak car.
Yes,
that was the year for me.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. And my dad was racing street stocks when I was growing up. So we used to go to all these little local speedways and watch them do figure eights and all,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I grew up around the sport, essentially. I mean, I didn't know that I had as big of a love for it as I do now. But, that was just a crazy time in my life, just being at Florida State and then having my dad get into racing and start that. And then wondering, like, hey, is there an opportunity for me to work in that sport, and would I like it, you know? And that's eventually what I ended up doing and how Martin and I met.
So that kind of goes to my next conversation. So sports marketing, and then your dad kind of brings you to the NASCAR side. So unless my math is way off, Martin had to be driving for Chance 2?
Yeah,
this is like 90 – make sure I have my years right.
Well, no, this is like 2000, early 2000s, like sometime around 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I actually moved to Charlotte because I missed my family. I was working in South Florida, and I moved back to North Carolina. I really missed my family. My dad ended up moving there because his race team was there, and mm-hmm. my brother and sister were there, and my mom was eventually going to move there. And so I really wanted to be close to my family, and I ended up interviewing with a friend that my dad knew that owned a sports marketing company and working for Miller Brewing Company. I actually flew to Milwaukee and met with Steve Laletta, who now works for – we're all connected.
This is a small circle.
It's a really small circle. So that's who my boss was, actually, is Steve. And we ended up becoming really good friends, and I worked for Miller, and I loved it. And I did Rusty's Last Call tour, and so I kind of traveled with Bobby Allison and did that whole deal at the end, and it was so special to be a part of that. I loved it. And then Martin and I sort of got set up through that.
So I read that. So am I allowed to ask, like, who the matchmaker was? Is this
Josh
public?
Snyder.
Oh, not
Do you remember
Josh.
Snyder?
I still know Snyder.
Okay,
Josh Snyder.
Well, that's who it was, and actually –
So for the names we're throwing, okay, let's go. Steve Laletta is, what do you think his title currently is?
I think he's president.
President of Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah.
Josh Snyder, who no one on this broadcast is going to know, but we know. I've met multiple times through Dale Jr., work with Dale Jr. So, so Snyder was the matchmaker.
Yeah, Snyder was working for Dale Jr. and somehow, you know, asked if we would go on a quote-unquote blind date.
Right.
I knew who he was.
Yeah.
I knew who he was in the garage. I didn't really know a lot about him. I knew he drove the 8 car for Dale Jr. That was all I knew. And asked me.
Snyder his PR guy at one point?
Yes, that's what he was doing at the time. And he's
There's
like,
not
oh,
a chance that Snyder and Martin are going to get anywhere on time.
Right?
Just to
not
be clear.
A chance. Yeah. So we, we ended up all going out to the Rusty Rudder that night.
Oh,
and
great location.
I know. So we ended up all going out, and I remember thinking to myself, this is not, this isn't good for me. Like, this crowd runs way too hard for me.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I had never met Dale Jr. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I had passed him in the garage, but I had never been friends with him or been out to Dirty Mo Acres or experienced any of that side of racing. So I wasn't so sure I wanted to be wrapped up in that crowd at that time. Not that they weren't having a great time, but I was really focused on my job then, and I loved what I was doing, and my family was close, and I really wanted to be with them. And Martin and I went, we all met up that night, and then we ended up going on a date, I don't know, a week or two later, and we moved in together 3 months later, and that was, I don't know, now almost 15 years ago or so.
That's so outstanding.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that, if you're going to socially work with that group, you have to be committed to the social life.
Yes.
They're professionals.
Which is so ironic, because that period of time in my life, I feel like after every Busch Series race, we would all go back to Dale Jr.'s on Saturday
That's
nights
right.
and party.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as when Martin moved away from all of that and we bought our house together and we moved in, he was so different than that.
Right.
That's
right.
Not really who he was. He really was a homebody. He wanted to be home all the time. I was like, who is this guy?
Right, right.
Like, I thought that you wanted to party every night, but he really didn't want to. He really wanted to just have this really quiet life and not do that anymore. And so it was a total change of pace for me. And it was actually quite refreshing at that time, because we were getting into our, I don't know, later 20s, which is still time, you know, still want to party and have fun. And we were, but just not as hard as we
That's
were
right.
in our early
right.
20s.
Yeah, the recovery is a lot longer.
The
recovery
is a lot
You say it wasn't
worse.
Good for you, and you joked about it, but I want to know, so for the people listening, you're now dating a driver who is competing. For the last year or two, had to still be competing. Like, PPC was around through the mid-2000s.
Yep.
So, like, when – I want to know the story. When did you finally break down to your dad and say, hey, by the way?
Yeah.
Because it had to be –
That was tough. Yeah.
That has to be an
awkward moment. Awkward dad-daughter moment.
Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
My dad
Because my daughter's 13, and that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
That's what I've determined. We're never.
That's what you think.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I'm losing this battle,
right,
I think.
Right. Yeah. My dad really didn't want me to date a race car driver. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can understand now why. You know, I get it. I think at some point throughout that time, because my dad had a race team and he was competing against Martin's car, I had to sit down with him and say, hey, you know, I'm sure people in the garage are talking. I was still working in the garage.
Yeah, right.
So I really wanted to be this, like, professional female, you know, marketing person that valued my job and wanted to find my place in the garage. But I was really careful because I didn't want people to know that I was dating him, because I didn't want it to be a conflict of interest. So it was quiet for a long time before we ever were out in public together. And I remember telling my dad, hey, you know, you're probably going to hear some rumors in the garage, but, you know, this is who I'm dating. And he was like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't really remember him being upset with me. I just remember him saying, like, you know, I really want you to think about where your place is in the garage, what you want to do. You want to be respected as a professional. And I think that's really hard as a female working in the garage. You know, you have no other opportunity really to meet people.
That's what I try to explain. People, I don't understand. Like, to this day, I'm 40 years old.
Yeah.
I have one or two casual friends that don't work in NASCAR.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So I equate it the same way, right? So as a guy meeting buddies to hang out with, they all work there because that's where you spend all your time. So to your point, as a female, like,
that's your dating pool.
Yeah, where are you going?
That's your dating pool.
That's a rough pool.
It is a rough pool to choose from, right? So, I mean, you're on the road, you know, 38 weekends out of the year. Mm-hmm. So your opportunity to meet people and to gain friendships or to date or whatever are very small. So I think my dad understood, and it's crazy. My dad was over yesterday at the house. We had, like, a big celebration for Martin's win, and it was his birthday, and they're so close now. I think now that my dad's not in racing, he really misses it.
Right.
And so having that connection to Martin and having somebody to kind of watch and cheer for, and he loves that, and they're really close now. And so I think it all worked out good because he's close with my family. But there was a period of a couple years there where my dad was like, you know, my dad had heard the stories of what went on at Dale's.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm not saying it was, like, super crazy, because I don't want Dale to get upset with me.
No, but to your point.
But it was the party place. It was the party place to be, you know? And so I think my dad had that little period of time where he was like, you know, you need to be
really
careful.
Like, as a dad, it's my job to protect my daughter.
Exactly.
Even though the real world's out there,
that's
I don't have to believe it.
That's
not
right.
Yet.
Yeah, exactly. No. But, you know, he knew we'd moved in together not long after that. And I think he knew that we were going to be together for a really long time. And it certainly hasn't been an easy 14, 15 years for us. We've been through a lot together. But, you know, I think it's just kind of made us who we are today. And I'm thankful for all of that.
So you and Martin meet, you move in together. So, okay. And you brought it up right at the beginning of the show. The Martin Truex Jr. Foundation.
Yeah.
We're going to get into why you created it, but just really quick. Do you ever just can't believe way back when you made that decision that now?
Yeah.
It's fortunate and unfortunate that it all overlaps, but what was it in 2007 that you said, this is what we should do?
Martin was doing really well in his career then, and I think we just both felt like we'd been blessed as children and had a really good childhood, and that we were so lucky to be healthy and to have this platform through NASCAR to be able to give back and help other people. So I think right off the bat, we just knew. I mean, I just remember sitting outside one day saying, you know, we give a little here and there, but we really need to start something that's like the foundation of who we are. Mm-hmm. You know, what do we want to do? And what do we, one day when we're not here anymore, what do we want our legacy to be? And for me, I wanted my legacy to be that I was here to make other people's lives better. I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I knew that's what, like, God was calling me to do. I wanted to help children because I didn't have children at the time. I wanted to be a mom really bad. Mm-hmm. And it was just early. We were young. We weren't really thinking about that yet. We just knew that we wanted to help kids. So initially we started like, hey, we're going to start this foundation. We're gonna do like hunger, neglect, sexual abuse, kids that have cancer. We picked all these different things. And then somewhere along that journey, we just were drawn to kids that had pediatric cancer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's so much irony in it now that I battle the same disease. It's just incredible to me that in that moment that God was already in my life kind of paving that way. And so, you know, pediatric cancer became a huge part of our life. We'd come here and visit the kids and just we'd leave and we'd just cry the whole way home. Like, we have to do something to make their lives better. You know, what can we do? Mm-hmm. And that's really how it all started. And we got into the oncology part of it. And then, you know, fast forward to 2014 when I get diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And that's when we rebranded the foundation to include ovarian and pediatric cancer, which are two grossly underfunded cancers. Mm-hmm. And it is so ironic now that my life has ended up being one of them, you know? It's crazy.
It's amazing. You mentioned the here. Just remind all the listeners. So we're here at the Seacrest Studio, which is in the Levine Children's Hospital, Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a media studio. The Ryan Seacrest Foundation put it in with the help of the Martin Truex Foundation. There's actually a plaque on the wall with all the different people that helped give to create and to continue to fund this media space. It broadcasts to the kids' rooms. They can – different artists. The who's who of music is on the wall here, everybody that showed up. But that's the location for today. And we are talking with Sherry Pollux. We just touched on the Martin Truex Jr. Foundation, which was created in 07, so 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, and I've been to a few of these, it's surprising me the date you pick for the catwalk now that I know your birthday, because that's usually why I end up missing it, is because it's around All-Star and my wife does something nice for my birthday.
Yeah.
And but I've been to a few of these. An absolute genius idea to have a fashion show. Everybody comes. It's so different than – and I'm not knocking any other charity. Anybody who puts time into any charity, really, God bless you. You're doing great things. But this is just so unique. It's so different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much fun. what was it? I want to know, A, how you thought it up, and B, I really want to know what Martin thought when you said, hey, look, we're going to do a fashion show.
Yeah, so that first year, 10 years ago, I own a clothing store where we live, and I thought, gosh, you know, it'd be so cool to just do something different. Let's just have a fashion show, see how many people show up. We did it at River Run Country Club in Davidson. There was like 50 people there.
Right.
And I told Martin, I was like, hey, we're going to do this fashion show. There was no kids in it then. It was just models. Right. And I'm going to donate all the proceeds back to our foundation. I just want to see how it goes. I just want to see who shows up. And he's like, oh man, do you want me to come to that? And I'm like, yeah, it'd be pretty nice if you showed up.
I mean, give you a little hint. Name is the foundation.
Yeah,
so.
I'll give you a little hint. If you don't show up, the doors are going to be locked tomorrow when you get home. So he did show up, and we actually had a great time that night, and we raised about $7,000. And we were like, man, we might be onto something. There's like 50 people there. That's not bad. You know, we're not doing too bad. So this was early days of the foundation when like $7,000 was it still is a lot of money.
Still
but to us then, we were like, whoa, we're doing something right. So then, you know, year after year, it got bigger and bigger. And I don't remember if it was like the second or the third year. I was like, it would be really cool if we got the kids to be involved. And then what if we had like celebrities walk with the kids? You know, what if we like got the NASCAR community involved and like had the drivers come out and walk with the kids? And how special would that be? Not only just for them to be able to meet the drivers and maybe have a relationship with them for the future, you know? And how many people would show up to see them walk the runway, to see them have this night where they can forget about everything that they're going through, leave their treatments, their medical problems at home, and just be a superstar for the night. And us to get to spoil them and give them stylist and clothes and bring them in limos, whatever we can do to make their life better. And it just took off like I never even imagined it could. And you know, last year was our 10th anniversary, and now we're to the point where we're like, okay, we can do $1 million in one night. I know we can. Like, we're so close.
That is so awesome.
It's incredible. And now we're talking about maybe expanding it and doing one in like a Nashville and doing them in just different locations, you know, and getting like Florida Georgia Line involved and our buddy Cole Swindell and some, you know, bringing some more music in. And Cole plays every year. The past couple years has played.
What a great guy.
God,
I've met him a couple times, went to his show.
He's incredible.
In Charlotte.
I was there too with Ruby, one of my catwalk kids.
We were there, and last minute deal, he was playing. And if no one's ever gone to a Cole Swindell show, it was an A+ show. He is one of the few artists that is as good live as he is in anything I've recorded. And
he's
just
incredible. Yeah, I know. I keep telling him I want him to come here. We were talking about that earlier. I want him to come here so bad. He's been to one of the Seacrest studios. I think it was in Atlanta, but he is just an incredible person, and he's so good with the kids. So the cool thing about catwalk is that not only do the drivers develop relationships with the kids that usually last a lifetime, they keep in touch with the kid they walk with in the show, but Cole does too. So Cole met this little girl named Ruby that is just a really, if you follow me on social media, you see her on my page a lot. She has just stolen my heart, and she's in maintenance therapy right now. She's not treated here. She's treated at Novant, but she is a special little girl, and Cole saw her sitting on the edge of the stage at Catwalk this past year and just fell in love with her, took this amazing picture with her, and then invited her to come to Charlotte.
That's so great.
So we bring her out to his concert, and as you saw if you were there, he brings her out on stage and dances with her and just lights up her whole world. And now Cole Swindell is her boyfriend. So we went and saw him last weekend in Virginia, and I took her again, and he took her out on stage in the middle of a memory and slow danced with her on stage. And you could have just like – I mean, I was like a puddle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could have just, like, thrown my heart on the ground. I mean, it was just to see the way she looks at him and the way she looks up to him. And just he's a really good person. He just has a really big heart. Mm-hmm. And he thinks so much of our foundation and our kids. And it's just, it's really cool to build those relationships and then see them blossom after Catwalk and see that commitment, you know, happen all the way through. It's just really cool.
I don't think the kids realize you know, the kids will say, oh, this sports star, this music star, this race car driver, that's my hero, that's what I want to meet. And so many times it flips.
Yeah.
So many times you take this star, whether it's Cole or Dale Jr. or Martin or whomever, and you meet these kids and they have no idea they become our heroes, right?
That's
because
so
they are doing more than not you, but more than me and most of these other people have ever had been challenged with in life. And it's truly amazing to see they can kind of light up a room because they really kind of put to shame the effort we think we're putting in. We're not putting any hard work in compared to what these kids are doing.
Cole says that all the time. Every time we go see him in concert and we bring her, he's like, she lights up my whole world.
Yeah.
Like, I look up to her. Like, I look to her to see how I'm supposed to live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we wear these bracelets as they emulate Ruby, and it's just like emulate kindness and joy and hope every day, everywhere you go. You know, if you can light up someone's world everywhere you go, every day, whether at the grocery store or it doesn't matter where you're at, and that's really what we've tried to do, and we try to do that, you know, obviously every day of our lives, but we're all gonna, like you said, we all have bad days, but man, you can't be around those kids.
That's my motto, though. My wife gets a little frustrated with me at times because I don't have bad days.
Yeah,
I made a choice early in life that there's a lot I cannot control, but so much I control affects other things.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in the ripple effect. You know, one little change here can change something down the road that you have no idea exists. So I went, it was the first one I went to, the first catwalk was at MWR.
Yeah.
And it was my same thing. My wife and her girlfriends got together, and it took a little. She's like, "Look, we're going
not
to this
fashion
show." And I'm like, "I don't know."
Yeah.
So of course, I go to my social director. I call Dale Jr. And I'm like, "Hey, man, look, is this something?" Oh yeah, yeah, great time,
Dale's
great time.
Locked it in a lot.
And when he told me, because instantly he was like, "Oh yeah, you're going?
Yeah,
that's gonna be great. That's gonna like he's looking for people to hang out with." Yes. And it was a huge event, a great time. Continues this day. Every May? Is that basically still the time
every
frame?
Every Wednesday before the All-Star race. And
which
you were
for those
like,
who are listening, are right between the 10th and the 14th. That's right between our birthdays.
So I tell my sister every year, I'm like, why do I plan this around my birthday? Like, I have so much going on right now. You know, it was my 40th this past year. We went to Turks and Caicos, and had all this stuff going on. And, yeah, I mean, it's not great timing, but it's great timing for everybody else. It might not be for me, but it's, you know, it's not about me.
You
it's
did
about
Turks?
Them. Yeah.
I did Jamaica. Okay.
I heard. That's why Dale Jr. couldn't walk in my show.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was with you celebrating your 40th.
I forgot that.
He was like, Cher, I got bad news. I'm not going to be able to do a catwalk this year. And I was like, what? You promised me. He's like, yeah, it's
it was 40th. It was my 40th. It was.
Well, that's cool.
It was, you know, you got it. Yeah. Sometimes you have to celebrate.
That's right.
So these are all great things, and we're going to circle back. I'm going to break it up in the middle. We're going to circle all the way back to 2014 and have that whole discussion. But before we do that, every podcast – I've learned the best way to get to know somebody is to ask the most miscellaneous, random, quick hitter. These don't take a lot of thought.
Okay.
I call these first date questions because these are something I'm trying to understand.
Sure.
So I'm a coffee drinker. My wife's a tea drinker. You are?
Tea.
A tea. So now does Martin drink coffee?
No.
Really?
He doesn't drink anything in the morning because he's not up.
Even the hunter, though, no coffee when he hunts.
No.
That's shocking. I couldn't do that.
No, he loves the smell of it. He hates the taste of it. And he's not usually up before noon, so.
Okay. All right. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Beach.
Yeah. Every day of the week. Yeah. I mean, I love the mountains, and I love to hike, and I love nature.
But the beach is the beach.
But the beach is the beach.
Okay. All right. This can be a two-part. So you've met, much like me, been around for 40 years. In your 40th year, are you a morning or a night person?
A morning.
Okay.
That is a two-part question because I'm not really either. I'm not an early riser. I don't get up to like 8 or 9. I'm not like a morning person, but I love that peacefulness of the morning. Like I like to go sit outside and be by myself and like take a minute. I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of like I do my Bible study in the morning. I like to just have that quiet time. I used to be a night person. Like I used to love to go out at night and have fun with my friends and stuff. After my cancer diagnosis, it was a lot harder for me to do that because I'm still on oral chemo, so I don't do well that late at night. I could try to go to bed fairly early, but I do have times where I go out and have fun and party, but I pay for it the next day. So
I feel like we're the same person because my old crew chief habits. So I'm like a 5:30 guy in the morning, just by habit.
Man.
I wake up, which means I'm like a 9 PM,
9:30. Yeah.
And now that I have a 10th grader,
I'm
like, Trish, my wife and I, we joke. She's like, you know, what do you think he's doing? I was like, I don't know, but we went to bed at 9:30.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he behaved because it's like, I don't know what he did past 9:30.
Exactly.
I was asleep.
Yeah.
All right. This one here, this is more for the traveler in you. When you travel, are you an adventurer? Try a boutique hotel or you're a creature of a habit? You like your own restaurants in your own town. How do you travel?
No, I'm an adventurer. I like to pick different cool little boutique hotels and stuff. The only thing I would say I'm like creature of habit about is my food. I'm like psycho about my food because I have a crazy diet.
Yep.
So I either bring my own food or I like research where I'm going ahead of time so I know which restaurants to go to.
I think that's totally acceptable. Yeah. All right, so the last one, most important personal quality and your pet peeve, which can be a personal quality or anything else. When you meet somebody, friend, foe, whoever – What's the one quality you look for the most?
I would say humor, because I'm like a really joyful, happy person. So if you can make me laugh, like if I'm around you and you can make me laugh and have a good time and just like we have dance parties at our house all the time. Like I need somebody that's like got a lot of energy, that's really joyful, which is ironic because Martin's nothing like that.
I was getting ready to say, I hope he's not listening.
No, Martin, it's okay. He's not anything like that. So, well, they say opposites attract.
We all do, because my wife is
yeah.
She is a straight, she's an attorney, right? So
there's
she can break down and have a good time.
Yeah.
But let's be clear, you know.
She's very like, yeah.
I mean, a lot of her emails will start with, you know, in reference to paragraph, I'm like, okay, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. People don't talk
out.
Like this.
Yeah.
She literally to this because she's my agent now.
Yeah.
I don't have an agent, so
that's
she will. She'll like respond to something.
Yeah.
And now our new thing is she sends it to me and says, "Could you quote pretty this up?"
Oh my gosh, that's so
and
funny,
I'm like, sweetheart.
It is opposites attract for sure. Yeah, Martin and I are total opposites. I would say biggest pet peeve is just like people that are full of negativity and just are down all the time. I can't be around it. I don't want to be around toxic people in my life. I've really. Mm-hmm. Made a decision to just kind of eliminate all that from where I'm at right now. I just want to be happy. I want to look at the bright side of everything. I just believe that life is like 10% what happens to you, 90% how you react to it. And like, I was dealt a crappy card too, but I have chosen to do something good out of it. And I think we can all do that. And
I don't like, so my pet peeve is those people that are like the life vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, the people just out of everything. Any situation isn't good enough. The weather is not nice enough. I'm like, look, Eeyore, we can't hang out. Like, we can't hang out if you're going to be like this.
Great.
My best friend in life, he was my best man at my wedding. I was the best man, is Jason Burdett, who's Allgaier's crew chief.
Yeah.
And if people that don't know him, he's an Eeyore from the outside, right?
Yeah.
Like, he kind of walks around. But if you get to know him, he's great.
Yeah.
But that's my joke. I'm like, and he told me one day, he's like, I have to be like this because of you.
Yeah.
Because if I was bubbly and you were bubbly, this wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So he blames me.
Yeah.
He blames me. All right, well, there you go. There's the quick hitters with Sherry Pollux. We've learned she's going to drink tea on the beach, perhaps in the morning, while she meditates.
Maybe.
And go to her favorite restaurant that has all the rest. So we've learned all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so great conversation, and they can't always be great. They all have to be real at times. So 2014 was my final year as a crew chief.
Yeah.
So as awful as this may sound, I was living in my own little world, my own little bubble. I didn't know what was going on with anyone else, much like most everyone is.
Sure.
But that was a major year in your life. So I guess take me through it. I've read so many articles, and you've explained it so many different ways. So I don't think it even justifies a question. It's more of take me through 2014 in your world.
Well, I mean, at some point in 2014, I wasn't feeling well. Sometime around not long after the Daytona 500, I just knew something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And started going to the doctor sometime around April and just saying, hey, I don't feel that great. You know, my stomach hurts all the time. I'm having this crazy pelvic pain. I'm having some lower back pain. I'm really bloated. Honestly, initially, I thought I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the doctor and said, you know, can you guys look at this and let me know what's wrong? And they were like, oh, you're fine. And sent me to an OBGYN that told me I had ovarian cysts, which is very common with women my age. And nobody ever throughout that time even mentioned the word cancer because I was 35 and perfectly healthy. And I think everybody, no family history. Everybody was just looking at this healthy person in front of them thinking, that's not even on our radar. And so I got sort of bounced around in this patient pinball process for about 6 months until Martin and I had an off weekend in July and went to the Bahamas. And I literally couldn't even, like, sit up because I was in so much pain. I was, like, bent over. And I was living off of just, like, over-the-counter medications and stuff. And I thought, something's got to give. Somebody has to find what's wrong with me. And I called this family friend of ours that was a gastro surgeon that is in Lake Norman. And I was like, hey, Dr. Heider, I need you. Like, Martin told me to call you. I don't know what to do. I don't feel well. And he's like, what have you done? And I went through my whole, you know, all the doctors I'd been through, everything I'd been diagnosed with, IBS, Crohn's, all this stuff, which I knew I didn't have.
Right.
And he said, you need to come to the hospital here in Lake Norman and let's do a scan. Has anyone scanned your body? And I said, no. And he said, we need to do a CT scan, find out what's going on. And he called me like 30 minutes later and said, hey, I need you to come back to the hospital and can you bring your family members with you? And I thought, man, that doesn't sound good.
Mm-mm.
I was like, why would I bring my family with me? And then Martin called me and said, hey, Dr. Heider just called me and he asked me to come pick you up at work and bring you over to the hospital and have your mom with me. And I'm like, okay, this is so weird. Why would he call you? And like, and never throughout that whole time while I was at work that day, did I ever even think about the C word. Like, it never crossed my mind. I thought maybe they're going to tell me I have, like, gallbladder stones or I have something. Yeah. Like, so I'm going to have to have some major surgery.
Right.
So we walked into Dr. Hyder's office, and I looked at him, and I could tell he'd been crying.
Mm.
And his eyes were just really red. And I thought, man, I think this is going to be really bad. So we get into this room, and he sits down on this chair and lays out all this paperwork and says, hey, I have your scans in front of me, and I'm not really sure how to tell you this, but you have ovarian cancer, and it's spread everywhere. Like, it's all the way up to your lungs, like to the, it was at my diaphragm from my pelvic area. I remember hearing my mom scream and Martin crying and just complete shock, just sitting there looking at him. Cause I didn't know a lot about ovarian cancer, but I knew it was deadly.
Right.
I knew it wasn't one of the good ones.
Right.
And I just said, that can't be my body on that scan. Like I just have a hard time. I don't feel that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that can't be me. And he said, Sherry, it is. And if we don't get you to a major medical center by, like, Christmas, you're going to be dead. And it was August 7th.
Wow.
And I thought, man, that's as real as it's going to get right there. And even throughout that time in the doctor's office with him, I didn't even have that moment where I started to cry. I just remember looking at my mom and Martin bawling at him and saying, I'm going to fight this with everything I have. So tell me what I have to do. Where do I need to go to get help, to get the best help in the world? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to do it now. And he said, I've already made you an appointment. You know, tomorrow you're going to go down to Charlotte and you're going to meet with this doctor and you're going to have major surgery. I'm not even going to go into all that,
but
it's, you know, I had a huge debulking surgery. I mean, I had somewhere around 50 tumors removed from my body. So I've had, you know, parts of my colon removed, parts of my stomach. I have no spleen, no appendix, no ovaries, no uterus, no cervix. I mean, I literally, like, I tell people all the time, I was like, they gutted me like a deer. I mean, they cut me from here to here and took everything that I didn't need to survive. And then, you know, even then, going into the surgery, they, you know, it was the first time Martin had ever stepped out of the car. It was Michigan race weekend, and Martin had to miss practice on that Friday, which was huge for him. Matt Crafton was in the car for him. I remember them telling my family, like, hey, if we get in there and we open her up and there's,
a
tumor somewhere, like on an artery or somewhere where we can't get to it, we're going to close her up.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And we're going to, well, we'll try chemotherapy, but it's not always successful with ovarian cancer patients. And usually their risk of recurrence is very high, which I knew. And I remember after leaving Dr. Hyder's office that day on the way home, the first thing I did when I got in the car is I Googled my disease.
Yeah.
And I saw the statistics.
I would, right? I mean, why, yeah. Isn't that the
I didn't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we all go to Dr. Google thinking it's going to give us all the answers.
Right.
And I started to read the statistics, and I thought, man, this is really bad. And I didn't say anything to Martin.
Yeah.
But I had this, like, breakdown moment when we got home in the driveway. Just threw myself on the ground, just screaming, like, why me? Why is this happening to me?
Right.
I've done everything that I thought I was supposed to do in life right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is this happening to me right now? And I text my doctor, Dr. Hyder, and said, hey, you just gave me a death sentence, didn't you? And he said, no.
Right.
Get off the internet.
Right.
Get off the internet. Mm-hmm. Like this, like nothing.
That's what I was going to say. I didn't want to interrupt, but the beauty of the story is we're talking 2014, and here we are in September of 2019.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the beauty of the story.
Right. And that's really what's gotten me through this made me want to be this person that can bring hope to other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it doesn't matter. Nobody can tell you that you're a number or your statistic.
Right.
Nobody can tell you how long you're going to be on this earth. Like we all are here for a limited amount of time. And what are we going to do with that time? And how are we going to live our life? And for me, I knew that even going through this like horrible thing that I was going to go through, I wanted to inspire and bring hope to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to find a way to do that, even through the really tough times. And I mean, I had 40 IV chemotherapy treatments. I've had two surgeries. I'm on an oral chemo now. I mean, I've had a lot of drugs and been through a lot of stuff. And I still feel like every morning when my feet hit the ground, I'm like, man, I'm here another day. You know, what can I do to make somebody's day today? Like, this is just amazing. Like, well, it's incredible.
It's completely amazing. I mentioned the kids. You know, you go in that list of other people's heroes. It's great if you can catch a ball, drive a car, do for different things. But those are, like, God-given gifts that you are just lucky enough you get to show other people.
Yeah.
You were given anything but a gift. But how you reacted from it and how you continue to react from it, I think, is really the gift. Like I said before, I don't have bad days. I don't know why. I wish I knew why. Like, I wish there was this moment. My mom is a two-time breast cancer survivor. My grandmother, who I live with, she kind of raised me. for 20-something years had cancer of some sort.
Wow.
Finally took her life, but 35 years of a survival, you know.
It's incredible.
So I'm not sure, like, what it is about that, but eventually I'm just like, you know.
I'll tell you what it is.
Like, you know.
It's perspective.
I think that's what it is.
It's perspective. So you wake up every day and you just have this unique perspective on life. You just look at it so different. It's as a cancer survivor, it's really hard to explain what that feels like to other people that haven't been through what you've been through. Like it's so cliche to say, but like everything is different. Like the sky is bluer, the grass is greener. Like you look at your life so different. Like like winning races and championships and all that, it's awesome.
Yeah, great.
But like the comparison of like what it feels like to do that and then what it feels like to survive like any kind of severe trauma in your life and like have this newfound feeling of what it feels like to really be alive is just not comparable. I don't know how to explain it.
Right.
Like, and it's hard because the people around you don't really understand it because they've not been through it. So you're
they have empathy, but they don't have.
Exactly.
Right.
You can try to explain it to them, but it's not really until you, I thought I knew what all my catwalk kids went through. I thought I knew what it was like to go through pediatric cancer. I would teach their parents.
Right.
Like this is what you can do with your kids. And you can teach that all day long, but until you've been through it and it hits your home, it is a game changer.
So I guess this is my follow-up. Dale Jr. and I obviously are very close friends, and he has tried to explain concussions. And he gets to the same point you're at right now. He's like, man, I don't know. And he talks about these people he has met with his treatments, and they have this bonding relationship because they have battled this same thing. So when you go through the rooms of a place like here in the hospital or wherever – is it just an instant connect? Like
instant connection.
I'm trying to come up with a question, but I can't. I can't even understand it well enough to.
That's right. Yeah,
you know?
It is. It's like that with my catwalk kids too. So throughout the time when I was in my treatment, like those 2 or 3 years when we had catwalk, and I was in that severe treatment when I didn't have any hair. I didn't have hair for, I don't know, roughly 3 years. And I wore wigs a lot just because when I was at the racetrack, I just didn't want everybody staring at me. I didn't want a lot of questions about it. So I was like, I'm just going to wear my wigs. Well, when I would go to meet with the kids and like get them fitted for their clothes, I would just get down on the ground with them and say, hey, I know what you're going through. Like, I know what this feels like.
Right.
And I know that you're going to have bad days. And I know how bad chemotherapy sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not fun. But, like, there's going to come a day, too, when you're going to feel better and everything's going to be all right. And I'm just like you. I've been there. I've experienced it. I know what you're going through. I know what you've been through. And, you know, at one point we were in the dressing rooms and one of the little girls took my wig off. And she was like, oh, my gosh, you're just like us. Because she was bald, too.
Right.
And I just it's just this connection that's so hard to explain. You just have this empathy and this feeling for them that you're like, I know what you're going through, and there's going to come a season in your life you're going to get through this, and everything's going to be okay. And I wish I knew that for, like, certainty, but I love that I can bring them that hope. That
right,
I can,
right.
You know, none of us know for certainty. Martin and I just had this discussion last night. You don't know any more than I do if you're going to be here tomorrow.
That's right.
There's nobody in this room does, regardless of whether you're battling an illness or not. So we all want to live our life like that every day. It's just really hard to have that perspective every day unless you've been through it.
It is. And it's, like, I don't know. I just, kids and priorities and just everything in my life has changed. I don't know. I wish, I tell my wife all the time, not that I was ever ready for a third child, but I wish I would have been better. I had my son at 24. From 24 to 30, I just became a crew chief at 25.
Wow.
And, like, it's this blur of children, right? And I'm like, I tell her all the time, I'm like, I don't know how you did it because, man, I wasn't much help.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I could do anything, but you can't go back and redo it.
You can't.
So every time I tell myself or anybody, when I hear somebody say, well, I wish I could go back, it's like, well, you can't, but you know what's coming ahead.
Yeah.
Like, you can always make the change of perspective.
It's so true.
Coming ahead. So this goes right into, I've read so many articles about how it changed you, but then this hashtag, and it started, correct me if I'm wrong on all this, Sherry Strong started as a hashtag.
It did,
a social
on social media.
Hashtag.
Yeah.
And it has grown. So. Give me the, like, how did it start? What does it become? I mean, give me the Sherry
Honestly,
Strong.
I don't know who started the hashtag on social media. Somebody at some point along the road when I was in the hospital and receiving all my treatments, probably a fan somewhere, just started hashtagging every time somebody would post a picture, like every time somebody would send prayers, would just hashtag Sherry Strong.
Right.
And I was like, man, that's cool, you know. And then Ray Everham and his wife Erin started making t-shirts, and then these teal t-shirts, because teal is the color of ovarian cancer awareness. So then we had all these, like, never give up t-shirts that had Sherry Strong on them. And so it just became this movement. And at the time, the person that was overseeing our foundation thought, What do you think about actually starting a website, sherrystrong.org, where we can, like, bring hope to cancer patients?
Right.
We can inspire them. It doesn't necessarily have to be ovarian cancer, just people that are dealing with any type of illness. Like, can we make a resource where they can go to get help and then find and have hope? And would you be willing to, like, start a blog about what you've been through? And at the time, I was really getting into, like, integrative medicine. And so I, you know, would you talk about integrative medicine on there and start to educate people about what they can do to feel like they have some sort of control over their disease? Because I think ultimately, as a cancer patient, we know that a lot of it is out of our control. So we want to have that feeling of control when it comes to something, mm-hmm. whether it be, you know, how we treat our bodies, what we put in our bodies, you know, how we react to the treatments, the side effects, all of that. And I was, like, really getting into that. So We started sherrystrong.org, I don't even remember what year that was, and it's crazy now because we get hits from all over the world.
Wow.
We get patients from all over the world that send us messages, and now we have this huge retail store and all the Sherry Strong apparel, and, you know, we sell it at the racetrack now,
right,
and
right.
The tracks allow us to do that, which is amazing, and Toyota has a display, a big Sherry Strong display, and they sell a bunch of stuff, and it's just incredible. I mean, I don't know how it got that big, but I'm so thankful that it did, and I'm thankful that fans have embraced it and helped me raise awareness for a disease that is grossly underfunded and doesn't get a lot of attention, because you hear a lot of people talk about breast cancer, but you don't really hear anyone talk about ovarian cancer, and it's just massive numbers. You know, 500 something thousand women a year get diagnosed with breast, and there's 22,000 of us that get ovarian. And out of those 22,000, well, not out of those 22,000, but 22,000 get diagnosed, 14,000 die every year.
Wow.
So it's the statistics are not great.
Yeah.
So we want to change that and bring awareness to that. And so that's, you know, I don't know. It's so surreal to me that we've been given this platform to be able to do that. NASCAR's just been so good to us. As you know, they let me drive the pace car last year in the month of September.
It was awesome.
And it was teal, and it was just so cool. And Martin's car was teal and at the Roval.
So you bring up teal. So September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month and Childhood
yes.
Cancer Awareness Month.
How ironic is that?
And it's embarrassing to say, I hate to admit this on the pod, but until you started putting it out there as it should have been out there, I had no idea of this
yeah.
teal
Why
color. I just didn't.
Yeah.
Pink I did see.
Right.
And
it's everywhere.
Yeah, but I've seen now my friends at Wheels Up have a
teal airplane.
Teal airplane.
They flew me on it bunch of times.
Right, I've seen teal race cars.
Yeah. Teal gloves that Dale Jr. wore.
Yeah, the
teal steering wheels.
Yeah, it's taken me.
Yeah.
This is awful to say, but I had no idea.
It's not awful. Why would you know? Unless you're
yeah.
directly affected by it in your life, or you have a mom or a sister or an aunt or a grandma
right.
that's been through it, you wouldn't know. I didn't know either. I had no idea. So it was a huge education.
Well, take me as
process.
Your case study then, because I had no reason to know, and now I know.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So we're doing something right. We're creating awareness about something that doesn't get a lot of attention, and
mm-hmm.
and that was our whole point. And, you know, Martin's sponsors have been so amazing. Like, Auto Owners does a teal car, and they
right.
put so much behind this campaign, and they just gave Martin and I a check for $50,000 at the race and Indy, and had my logo on the car, and they do so much for us, and we've just been blessed. Johnny Morris and Bass Pro gives so much to our foundation, and we've had all these people that have embraced what we're doing. And then now, you know, Dale Jr. started the movement of, I asked him when I was really sick that first year,
yep.
hey, would you be willing to wear a pair of skeleton gloves that were teal? Just let people know what the color of ovarian cancer awareness is. Just draw some attention to it.
Yeah.
And he said, absolutely. Like, he didn't even think twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then that started that whole glove campaign that he now does with
yep.
all the different colors for different types of diseases, which is awesome. And then I thought, man, I got to do something else. It's like really cool. And that, you know, that kind of led into the steering wheel thing. Now we have this teal and gold steering wheel
mm-hmm.
campaign that we do, and we'll be debuting it at the Roval. And it's amazing to see all the drivers embrace that. And I think we have roughly 33 drivers running a teal and gold steering wheel for childhood and ovarian cancer at the Roval. And then we auction them off. So it's become this huge moneymaker for us as well, because everybody, you know, the driver signed the wheel, everybody
right.
wants to buy them. And again, you know, all it takes is an in-car camera from NBC.
Yeah, right.
And we can create this awareness. People are like, wait a minute, why is that steering wheel teal and gold? And for you guys to mention it in the booth, and it just becomes this movement. It's the ripple effect, right?
That's it. That's how it happens.
One
it starts.
One small little
and it,
wave makes a huge.
You're amazed.
Yeah,
I'm amazed how many people, all of us, have the chance to touch for
yeah.
crazy. So you mentioned 33 drivers are going to run them this week at the Roval. There will be a few bent. I'm going to go ahead and let you know, because I expect it to be a crazy race.
Absolutely.
Third race of the playoffs. And then you auction it off where? Where can a fan go and buy these steering
well,
wheels?
Well, I'm not exactly sure where they're being auctioned auctioned off. We use different programs, but they can go to our website, Martin Truex Jr. Foundation.
Find everything they want
there.
Yeah,
there'll be a link there to go to where
they're
auctioned.
I'll be running them up. So I won't lie. During the race, I was running up who was leading. I think it was Kyle Busch. So from the booth, I kept bidding on Kyle Busch's gloves.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
And because Rick was picking on me because Rick goes, were you going to end up with those gloves? I said, happy.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to pay the charity for the gloves. I collect gloves and helmets. Maybe I'll put a steering wheel in my office.
That's awesome. Yeah. In the first year we ran that campaign, Martin won the Southern 500 at Darlington with that wheel. And so Martin took the wheel out of the car and showed it on TV and said, hey, this is the steering wheel campaign we're doing. Yep. We're going to be auctioning it. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I think he was the only one. There may be one or two other drivers that were running it. It was the first year we did it. And Johnny Morris was watching at home, the owner
That's
of
the
Bass
right
Pro
guy
Shops,
to see.
And he said, I'll take it for $100,000.
Yep.
And he texted, and Martin told me in Victory Lane that day, and I just started bawling. I was like, oh my gosh, $100,000 for a steering wheel. Like, it just takes special people to make that type of impact, you know, and to make a huge impact on our foundation so that we can help build places like this and make a difference in these kids' lives. And yeah, it's another program that has just taken off and just become incredible.
Well, and NASCAR overall, so great with the NASCAR Foundation, I think, gets involved in so many of these different things.
Yeah.
They help kind of I guess orchestrate's not the right word, but just help it all work along. And it's great because, how do I politely say it? Like, so the NASCAR garage is not a nice place.
Yeah.
For good
it's
reason.
It's really competitive.
It should be.
Of
right.
Course.
So I was raised there for 20 years. Yeah. And for 20 years, you know, that was where the battle happened.
Yeah.
So it is refreshing to see the most competitive people I know.
Yeah.
And it's from driver, crew chief, tire changer. It doesn't matter who it is. For a moment, they're going to
come together for one cause.
And Max Pappas, I think, donates them all. So there's a lot of players involved. It's such a great situation.
It's cool. And we did that one year at Chicago, too. We not long after I was diagnosed, everybody ran teal ribbons on their cars. And they were given the option when they went through inspection. NASCAR said, you don't have to.
Yeah,
but, you know, Sherry's really sick, and we're just asking that we to bring awareness to this. And, I mean, I don't remember seeing a car that didn't have a teal ribbon
on it.
I'm
sure there wasn't.
It was – and for me to sit home, I was so sick then. And, I remember just watching on TV just bawling, thinking, I can't believe people think enough of me or my disease to even want to bring awareness to it. What a gift. And honestly, right after I was diagnosed, there was so many people that reached out to me. And you'll love this. Obviously, two of the biggest supporters of me in that time. I'll tell you two things. One, the first person that called me after I was diagnosed when it went public, we were like, okay, we have to tell everybody. Because what hypocrites would we be? We've been advocating for these diseases for so long if we didn't tell everybody what I was going through. And I was going to miss a lot of races, and Martin was going to be out of the car. And was Jimmy Johnson. He was the first person that called my phone, called me and said, what can I do to help you? Like, I don't know if you need to go somewhere, if you need to take my airplane.
Right.
I just want you to know that Shaney and I are here. Just tell us. And we weren't like really that close with them.
Right. Right. Yeah.
They just were these incredible people that wanted. And the second person that called me was Mr. Hendrick.
Not surprised at all.
And sat down with me and just said, I don't know what you need or what I can, but I've been through this. I know what you're going through, and I know how tough it is, and I'm here if you need me. And he, to this day, we still text each other. I hug him every time I see him. We talk about how precious this life is that we've been given and this second chance that we've been given. And we know likely that I have a chronic illness now that I'll battle for the rest of my life. And he kind of looks at his disease the same way, but we live a really good life.
Right.
And we feel so lucky to be here. But to have that connection to somebody like him that can provide that kind of support, because he does that for a lot of people, but he's such a busy man. To think that he would even take the time to check in with me and reach out to me was just incredible. And it shows how supportive and amazing the people in the NASCAR garage are.
Well, and I think he's one of the ones that he's influenced my life. I started working there at 16, right? So we talk about perspective. He's helped my perspective. I'll tell you, just a few months ago, I needed help. My daughter was a little ill, and we just needed a doctor to get in. And I texted him at like 11 o'clock at night, said, hey, listen, tomorrow when you get rolling, I think you know somebody here. Could you? Phone rings.
Yep.
You know, and that's how he is. He's that's like, this guy's going to call you. This is who this person is. This is what you need to tell.
Was it Dr.
Yes,
Limitani?
Sir. So it started with Dr. Limitani.
Yeah.
And he put me with another one. But
that's his favorite.
That's his guy, right?
That's
it all started. Dr. Limitani, I owe a lot of favors to. He helped my mom through a lot of stuff. But to your point, these people, this is just how they are.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you, even with your battles and your stuff, I feel the same way with you and Martin and kind of everybody reaches out. It's we're here at Levine Children's Hospital, Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Seacrest Studios, a media studio. put in basically the lobby. Like, we were in the lobby.
Yeah.
In a studio so cool. that people could come perform. People could come. They produce some shows here. The kids in their rooms can see it. I heard they did, like, a bingo one time.
Yeah, we've played bingo.
We're going to have to do, I mean, bingo.
Yeah. I think. It's really fun. Martin and I have done a lot of really cool stuff in here with the kids, a lot of games, and, yeah, and we've had performers in here, and it's just, yeah, it's such an incredible place.
I'm a big believer in perspective, so I'll be back with my kids. Maybe we can host a bingo game.
Yeah. Get
a group. Maybe we'll do, like, a NASCAR night.
Yeah, so we come at Christmas time, too, with NASCAR Hall of Fame, and we go up and visit with the kids and hand out gifts on the floors and stuff, and that's such a special time of year for us to be able to give back. And you know what child wants to spend Christmas in the hospital, you know?
Right.
So we try to come here and bring them some hope and bring some gifts and get everybody in a room together and have a little bit of fun with them and bring Santa with us. And it's really cool.
I love it. I love meeting those kids. They are heroes of mine. Cher, you're a hero of mine. What you've gone through is spectacular. Not just the fight you've put up, but then putting your story out in front of everyone to not just raise awareness, but to raise money is outstanding. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah.
It was a great conversation. I know much more about you now than now I've always wondered why you didn't go to Michigan. See, I was always confused all this time. So thanks again. Appreciate your time. And this has been another Letarte on Location. As always, subscribe so you get it right away. Rate and review and let us know what you think.
This Memorial Day, click into cordless power at the Home Depot. Tackle your yard cleanup with the precision and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt expanded cordless string trimmer. Then power through the heavier debris with more than an hour of runtime on the Ryobi 40-volt cordless battery blower. Right now, you can get either one for only $159 each. It's time to click into Memorial Day doing at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. How doers get more done.